The first apparent mention of Jerusalem is found on a piece of 3,800-year-old Egyptian pottery. For the vast majority of time since, Jerusalem has been perceived as a remote, baffling place, a kind of world historical Salt Lake City. Much of its soil is friably poor, and the nearest meaningful river or harbor is a journey of many miles. That this tactically worthless city became the Finland station of monotheism was one of history's stranger accidents. God would never have chosen Jerusalem, and so Jerusalem chose God. Topographically, Jerusalem has nothing to recommend it other than two pretty undulating valleys, known as Kidron and Hinnom, on its southern and eastern flanks. Both are deep and desertic, stubbled with little merkins of shrubbery and lined with low gray trees that look squashed and drained of chlorophyll. While these naturally occurring moats offer Jerusalem's early inhabitants considerable protection against invaders, later epochs would nullify their efficacy, allowing Jerusalem to become one of the world's more frequently occupied cities. The sun did strange things to the landscape here, vivifying the dominating grays and sands, weakening the greens, and walling off thousands of hillside houses behind shimmering heat haze force fields. Somewhere ahead of us, the Hinnom Valley crossed the Kidron Valley, which had a storied past. David traversed the Kidron Valley in flight from his traitorous son Absalom. A young Galilean healer named Jesus navigated his donkey along the Kidron Valley during his initially triumphal journey up to Jerusalem. Located within the Kidron Valley were many of the first century's most spectacular surviving burial sites, columnar audacities carved directly into the valley's rock walls, along with the supposed tombs of the prophets Zechariah and Isaiah. The Hinnom Valley, which begins on the western side of the old city, close to the Jaffa Gate, and turns sharply to slither along the base of Mount Zion, emanated more sinister historical vibrations. According to a fairly obscure verse in 2 Kings, the Hinnom Valley is where children were apparently burned alive as offerings to stubbornly enduring Canaanite gods. Jeremiah goes further, quoting the Lord's fulmination against those who spill the blood of the innocent in this valley of slaughter. Later, it was used as a place to dump things considered unclean, a rather overarching category for ancient Jews, whereupon all such refuse, including unclean corpses, was burned. These fires' greasy soot and smoke, some of it redolent of barbecued human flesh, blew through the streets of Jerusalem, dirtying cloaks and staining buildings. By the first century CE, the Hinnom Valley was no longer used as an open-air furnace, but apparently certain associations proved difficult to shed. In Greek, Hinnom becomes Gehenna, a word employed several times in the New Testament. In the Gospel according to Matthew, Jesus claims it as a place the scribes and Pharisees will be unable to escape, while in the Gospel according to Mark, Jesus refers to its unquenchable fire. Here was the rare religious tradition whose creation could be tracked virtually step by step. Begin with a site at the base of a city associated with child sacrifice and municipal incineration. End with a fiery transdimensional prison imagined as being located beneath the physical world. The Hinnom Valley was a place where you could literally, rather than figuratively, walk through hell. It was also home to a site of profound but ambiguous importance to early Christianity, though its precise location was becoming increasingly difficult to verify. Jay and I peered together at our fold-out map. On it, the bold-faced place names, Herod's Gate, Solomon's Stables, Dome of the Rock, Western Wall, were packed together so plentifully it invited despair of ever seeing them all. Down near the bottom of our map, however, stark and alone, but for an italicized Hinnom Valley, was our destination, Hakul Dama. We had been looking for it for close to an hour. Jay suggested we try yet another path. This was his first visit to Jerusalem. It was mine, too, but he was a historian, so I followed him. A shin-high wall of pale brown stones lined the new path. Some of the previous paths we had explored were blacktopped. This one was not. Not many feet had been this way. The path's gravel was still loose and crunchy. To the left was the base of Mount Zion, the southern face of which was bare and undeveloped. To the right were rocky cliffs, atop which were quite a few sandstone apartment buildings. That morning, it had rained. In a few places, thick spouts of collected runoff rainwater drained into the valley, as though someone were emptying a series of high-capacity pitchers. Along the path were several shallow caves, most of which were barred. We passed a few apparent dig sites fenced off with thin wire barriers. These little excavations all had an ongoing archaeological neatness to them, but there were no archaeologists working here this afternoon who could help us find Hakuldama.